Coming up on 517 now at KLIF, today is a huge day for NASA. They're sending a spacecraft 140 million miles away to get a better idea of what asteroids are really like.
Now, that spacecraft has been out there for a while, since I think almost, about a year or something like that.
Yeah, but now it's going to like slingshot itself over Australia
We need to
like
talk
that.
To somebody a lot smarter than us at this
point.
Yeah,
we're not very smart in all
Dr. James Garvin is the chief scientist at NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center, and he's on the line with us right now. Good morning, Dr. Garvin.
Good morning, Dave and Amy. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for joining us. It's a real honor. Now, first of all, we need to know how to pronounce this thing. It's OSIRIS-REx. Is that right?
That's correct. That's okay. Correct. It's an acronym that relates to the mission ideas, which is about our origins of chemistry on this planet that reflects how we live, understanding what asteroids are like across the whole solar system, and learning, ultimately, to protect our planet.
So this spacecraft needs sort of a boost before it can get to the asteroid. So what's going to be happening?
So today, before 1 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time, the spacecraft will use the Earth as a giant slingshot, as we like to say, a game day assist, if you will. But anyway, it will use that energy from the Earth coming within 11,000 miles of just near Antarctica. It will use that slingshot to change the angle of approach to this screaming asteroid in space so it can rendezvous next year with that asteroid, get to know the place, it's called Bennu, and then ultimately do a kind of a high-five touch-and-go and grab materials and bring them back to Earth.
Wow. What you've said, so
it's so mind-boggling.
It really is. You say it in such obvious. I mean, you know, it's like, well, see, we're going to do this and this and this and this and that. But I want to go back to how the slingshot effect works. For those who are not quite clear on this, we're talking about basically the Earth's gravity will pull the spacecraft in, and it's actually going to be really low for this type of maneuver, isn't it?
It is, but we're really adept at this. We've been doing this since the 60s, taking advantage of carrying less fuel and less weight, which it means it's less expensive to launch, and using the energy of planets. We slingshot ourselves to Jupiter, used Jupiter to slingshot ourselves to Pluto. We used a slingshot at Titan to get the Cassini mission into the upper atmosphere of Saturn before it ended. And so it's really the beauty of the math and physics and the dance of these spacecraft. And so this particular maneuver is very important. It's going to allow the spacecraft to change the angle of approach beyond the angle it would have been on by up to 6 degrees, so it can actually get to Bennu, which is a great way of getting there sooner, better, and giving us more time to get to know that object before we sample it.
Since this is going to be so close to Earth, are we going to be able to see this with the naked eye or maybe with a telescope?
Well, already amateurs with large binocular telescopes have seen the little fuzz of the spacecraft, and so some people will be looking for it. It's a very small spacecraft. It's about as big as your home refrigerator. So, you know, it's not like the International Space Station, which is pretty big, and you can see it go over, you know, on a nice clear night in the fall would be good. But nonetheless, some people will be looking for it. We'll be tracking it very carefully, and these precision maneuvers are like threading the needle literally thousands to millions of miles away to be really to save energy so we can do more stuff when we get to the cool places we go.
We're talking with Dr. James Garvin, chief scientist at NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center, and we're talking about OSIRIS-REx, which is, as you just said, and it's, again, you know, you're blowing our minds here. It's a spacecraft the size of my refrigerator, and you're sending it to an asteroid called Bennu. Tell us about Bennu and how it was selected.
So Bennu is an asteroid. It's about 5 football fields across. So, you know, a little bigger than a big football stadium, if you will. Well, a few big football stadiums. It was selected because, A, we can get there. And that's really important. There's lots of asteroids, you know, literally hundreds of thousands of them. But many are very hard to get to without, you know, without rockets bigger than we have and other solutions. Secondly, we can measure what we think the asteroid's made of using big Earth-based telescopes, and this one we think contains those magical building blocks of the squishy stuff that could have started the chemistry of life here on Earth or wherever. And those organic molecules, carbon-bearing things, we've detected on Bennu. So this is an ancient time capsule of the kind of organic chemistry. I know that's a it was a tough class in college for many of us. But anyway, of the organic chemistry that may have come into our early Earth billions of years ago and helped the planet become this magical place we live on today. So we want to get there. Bennu was selected by a very big team around the world, including our principal investigator at the University of Arizona, Dante Loretta, to be the best place to ask these questions literally at this time. So we're lucky we can get to this exciting place.
You're going to collect samples once there. They'll arrive back at Earth in the year 2023. How do you go about collecting samples from this?
Well, what we do is we rendezvous. It's kind of like a delicate dance. We rendezvous and approach very closely, half a mile an hour, and then with a long arm, with a kind of a vacuum frisbee-like thing at the end, we basically give a high five to the asteroid in the place we select after a year of mapping. We give it a high five. We use gas to basically mobilize materials that we then suck in, take that materials up to a couple of pounds of stuff if the asteroid is cooperative, and encase them in a capsule that we'll then send back to Earth in 2023. It will land near the Great Salt Lake in Utah. We'll recover the samples and bring them to Houston, Texas, to the Johnson Space Center, where they'll be cataloged and carefully separated into the samples and shared with the world community of scientists, women and men, who study these things in amazing laboratories to pick apart the early history of the solar system and our origin. So this is, you know, the kind of gift that keeps on giving.
Well, you talk about going to an asteroid and picking up some of it. That's a mind blower in itself, but now you're going to bring it back. You know, this is really amazing. Does OSIRIS-REx have its own, will it still have a propulsion ability to blast it off and head it in this direction, or how is that process going to go?
So while we're in this orbit of the and in the orbit of the asteroid Bennu, once we collect a sample and put it into this special capsule, the capsule will detach from the mothership, and OSIRIS-REx, the refrigerator-sized spacecraft, will say goodbye. The capsule will then be nudged toward an encounter with Earth, a very precise encounter, and it will enter the atmosphere in 2023 and land after parachutes and various braking maneuvers in the desert of Utah. We've done this before with Stardust and Genesis. It's the basis for missions that we'd like to send to bring back samples from Mars, to go to new places on the moon. And so we're pretty confident this is a very safe and smart way, with the least, you know, energy and resources, to bring back these priceless samples. And they literally will inspire generations in what we think they will tell us.
Is it frustrating to you how long all this takes?
Well, it's not frustrating when you think about what we're doing. Exploration, you know, the timescales are always tough. I mean, it took Columbus a month to sail over here, and it took Magellan, you know, years for one ship to get back after his first orbit of Earth in, you know, the 16th century. So time gives us time to learn how to use our spacecraft, and the team at University of Arizona, Lockheed Martin in Denver, at Goddard Space Flight Center, and around the world have been working in earnest, getting ready for rehearsals once we get there to practice some of the maneuvers we'll do as we really do this high-five maneuver with the asteroid. And these maneuvers with uncooperative targets. I mean, this isn't our space station now. It's a rock in space that's billions of years old from an early time of our solar system. We have to practice and be ready. So we have plenty to do as we wait for these exciting moments.
Well, we give you a high five. You're certainly amazing, and you certainly brought it down to our level, and we appreciate your time this morning.
I thought you were going to ask him when you said, is it frustrating? I thought you were going to ask him what I was thinking. Is it frustrating to be as smart as you are and have to talk to people like us all the time?
Talk to people as dumb as we are.
Well, yeah. So we just can't even wrap our heads around some of this stuff. Dr. Garvin, thank you.
Well, thanks, Dave and Amy, for having me and, you know, for supporting our space program. We're in your hands. It's the people's program, and we really thank you for talking about it.